What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Final hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on this Wednesday afternoon, ESPN 102.5. The game, every Wednesday at this time, we bring in Chris Mason, former Predators goaltender, Willie's partner in the booth on Fox Sports Tennessee, and hopefully we will indeed be talking about games we're watching, whether it's on television. I'm not sure. I don't know if we're going to be watching in person, but certainly watching on television. And we get a little bit closer to maybe the return to play for the National Hockey League. And what everybody's trying to figure out, Chris, said you never experienced this in your playing days, but what is it like? Well, I guess, wait a minute, I shouldn't say that. What will the play be like whenever you've been sitting and not doing – and you know this. This is different than even an off-season, right? Because in an off-season, you have a schedule. You have like a routine even in an off-season, where this has been even different than an off-season. Truly, what is it going to look like, the play, when indeed the National Hockey League comes back?
I think it's going to look the same. I think
really?
I really do. I think at the start – but it's going to be like the beginning of the season. It's going to be anyone's got a shot. Anyone's got a chance. It's been such a big layoff. And you mentioned too, you know, normally when the guys are off in summer, whether it's a lockout, you can skate and you can get that on ice conditioning. This is a different story. And I know, you know, at first it's going to be weird, but I bet these guys just can't wait to get on the ice, get going again. And I really think that they have enough time, you know, from now when you start the optional workouts and you're allowed to get back on the ice to when it actually starts. I don't know if it's going to be end of July or August, and they'll have a couple exhibition games. Maybe the first couple of games, I think those exhibition games are huge, but I really do think they have enough time to get back up in good shape. Game-wise, I don't know. That's the tough one. But when you think about, you know, you think about a normal training camp, there's six exhibition games. Maybe the guys play three, you know, the big guys. You know, some of the third or fourth line guys and third pair might play four games. So it's not too much different. But I think starting, I just really think they have to make sure they do give the guys enough time and they be careful. You know, you got to be tentative in training camp. You can't all of a sudden start training camp and go, you know, 110% right away and just go all out. I think you got to ease into that and make sure that you're really managing the rest. And I know they will. You know, the player safety is one of the most important things in the game, obviously. So I think when the game starts, these guys, they're so good. They're just so good now. I think it'll be high-end hockey, no question.
We see teams come back in playoff series all the time in the National Hockey League. It's pretty amazing to see, you know, it's probably more in hockey than any other sport. I think baseball has gotten better of comebacks in series over the years. But I still think hockey has the best, you know, the best comebacks. Down 3-2 in a series does not mean this series is over at all. So we had a caller earlier in the show say, what about in these best of five series? You know, when they're trying to whittle this thing down to get to the 16 teams and you've had this big layoff and coming back from that and you're down 0-2 in a series in a best of five, what will be the mentality where before, as I just said, you know, you just never know in hockey. But do you think that'll change if a team is like, man, come on. We're down 0-2. It's a best of five. We've been off for months and months and months. We're not winning this. Let's pack it up and get ready for next year. What do you think the mentality will be for players?
Well, I don't think that'll be the mentality for sure. I put it this way. If you're in a best of seven and you're down 3-0, that's a bigger mountain to climb than two. You only got to win three games to win the series. So it's going to be tough. I just think these guys are going to go out there and to get into these games that mean so much and how big they are and what's at stake in a best of five. It's going to be unbelievable. But I don't think you'll see that mindset. I think you're going to see these guys are just ultimate professionals. They're going to, you know, down 2-0. They're going to, if I'm in that dressing room, I'm down 2-0 or anybody, they're going to say, guys, we only, you know, you're going to go back to the old cliches, just one at a time. But you win one, you're down 2-1. You got to win this. You win the next one, you're tied. So you only win two games, you tie the series back up and then flip a coin and go for that third one. But I think it's going to be, it's a different mindset, though. It's not like if you lose two games, you still got time in the series, you're headed back home or whatever the case may be, and you're going to go win those two games. Then you're back on even, you know, you're back on even up there, and it's down to a best of three. I just think that the mindset is just going to be this one game at a time, and just that's what it always is anyway. You can't look too far ahead or look too far back in the rearview mirror. But again, when we're starting off like this, I just think any team right now, and you look at personnel, everyone's going to be healthy, you know, hopefully barring any training camp or exhibition injuries, but everyone's starting healthy. So you look at teams like Tarasenko or St. Louis that's got Tarasenko back and all the other teams. And, you know, Nashville had, guys banged up. Everyone did. So it's going to be like the beginning of the season where who knows? It's whoever gets hot, whoever gets a hot goaltender, who's ever power plays clicking right off the bat, who's ever, you know, you look at the Preds at the beginning of the year, Forsberg and Duchesne, those guys couldn't be stopped. You know, whoever gets that kind of production or that kind of start, they've got a big opportunity to go on a pretty long run if they can get hot, get those intangibles going. But again, I don't see really much of an advantage to any team here. You know, obviously the good teams like Boston and those teams that are stacked, I think they'll be okay. But again, you never know.
I think there's some worthy candidates, which is why I asked the question. The question is, and I need you just to give one player. You can just give one answer. I asked the show, who is going to benefit the most on the other side? In other words, the break did a lot of good, and you're going to see a different player when it comes to someone on the Predators roster. Chase said Ryan Johansson. Willie said Victor Arvidsson. I said Pekka. Who would your answer be?
Well, if I'm given one, I agree with all those. They would all be in that category for me. But for me, I'm going with Pekka, just simply because, obviously, if you're starting right now or at the end of this, you know, when the season ended, you're going to go, you're riding juice. He was on fire. But this has been a complete off season, and it's starting all over again. So the decision for me to start goaltenders based on what happened before the season ended is tough. Because it's so long ago. So I don't know, and I'm guessing, you know, a lot of these decisions on who teams start in goal is going to be based on training camps, maybe the first exhibition game. You know, let's say this is just hypothetical. Let's say Juice struggles in his exhibition game and Pekka's lights out. What do you do? You know, it's going to be a tough decision. Do you go say, well, Juice was awesome at the end of the season. He was, you know, we're going to run him into playoffs. That was 3 months ago. So I really, it's going to be very interesting to me. And Pekka's been, you know, he got off to an unbelievable start this year. He's just 8-1 or whatever he was, 9-1 or 8-1-1 or whatever it was. So I think Pekka, to me, is the one guy that I think could be the biggest X factor in this whole thing.
Talking to Chris Mason, at Mace, you think about Arizona. And I think they have a similar decision that they're going to have to make in goal. Would you agree?
Oh, I 100%. That's, you know, they're a good, hardworking team, really, really defensive. They got some offensive weapons. They got a couple guys. Phil Kessel was having a tough year, and we talked to Tyson Nash, Matt McConnell, in our little round table there, and they mentioned him. It's perfect for guys like that. You know, Taylor Hall, but again, Antti Raanta and Darcy Kuemper, two guys, you know, who's ever playing hot, and Kuemper seemed to be taking over the last couple of years. Raanta's had some injuries. So who do you start? I don't know. What if Kuemper comes back and he's, you know, average at training camp, and then his first exhibition doesn't go well, and Raanta's lighting it up. Coaches are going to have a really tough decision, and you're not going to see coaches waiting around after game one in that situation. Let's say, you know, they do start Kuemper because of his track record the last couple of years, and all of a sudden he stinks out the joint in game one. I think you're going to see, coaches pulling the trigger a lot quicker than normal in, let's say, a best of seven series. This is pretty unique, and especially in that position. The goaltending position, because they're gonna win and lose you hockey games. That's the biggest difference maker in having a big playoff run is having that goaltender hot. So you got to pick the right one, and if you don't, you got to switch quickly, especially for the teams playing in the best of five.
Yeah, I think it'll be some really tough decisions to be made after game one for a lot of teams. So Mates, let's look at some of the awards. They're voting on them right now. You and I, as NHL broadcasters, vote on the Coach of the Year, the Jack Adams Award. And I know we were texting back and forth with Hal. There's a lot of candidates. You could really make a strong case to win it for at least a half a dozen, if not more. I went with Jared Bednar as my number one. I thought he had a great year. But have you decided who you're going to vote for?
You know, it's funny. I was just on the phone with my best buddy. He's a coach. He coaches in Colorado's American League affiliate. And the same thing. There's six guys that it's hard to order them, too. I'm just having trouble because there's so many guys that I think are worthy of consideration in winning that award. I have it written down, and I haven't sent it yet. I just got the email. There's 3 hours left to vote, so I'm crunch time right now. But I have it written down initially. I've got Bednar, Vigneault, and Tortorella just because, Columbus this year is absolutely decimated. You know, they had American League team, half their team at some points of the season, and they found a way to hang on. But, I mean, there's, you know, a lot of people are picking Sullivan in Pittsburgh to win the award. Tippett and Edmonton, I thought, did an unbelievable job. There's so many guys, I think, that can be inconsiderate. Travis Green, they fell off kind of at the end. But, he did an unbelievable job in Vancouver. I'm probably missing somebody right now. Craig Berube, I mean, you know, he comes in. Obviously, they win the Stanley Cup, but starts out the year. They're top of the Central Division. They did it pretty much without Tarasenko the whole year. So there's a lot of guys that I think could win it. And it's hard to pick three. But right now, I have it written down right now, and this is not final. It's just my first kind of initial one. I have Bednar first, Vigneault, Tortorella.
And the other thing that is happening is all the other awards, and for Nashville fans, they would certainly like to see Roman Josi win the Norris. And all of these numbers that we were crunching and looking at before the season paused, we kind of drudged them back up because all of a sudden it's time for the decision to be made. It's kind of an odd way to go about it. But, and I wonder how that will influence the vote by the people they're doing. I think it's the sports writers that vote for the Norris.
Yeah, it is. That I think, you know, I don't know if this is a real thing, but I feel like, you know, bigger markets, if you're an Eastern team, a lot of the media you're going to see in Toronto is going to see Washington a lot more. And maybe that's just because I feel, players that I've played with have got snubbed before, Shea Weber in particular. I just think he's so deserving of this award. And I hate that, you know, the Norris Trophy is turned into, it feels like an offensive award. So the best offensive defenseman, when it's, I just feel it's the best defenseman. And I think without a doubt, and Willie, we try to take our bias out of this. Obviously, we get the luxury of watching Josi every single game, and we see how good he is, and we see how valuable that he is to this team. They would not have made the playoffs this year without Roman Josi. That's a fact. And the impact that he has, the way that he creates offense, by himself, the way he gets up the ice, leads the league. You know, he's one of the top in the league at zone exits, carrying it through the neutral zone, zone entries, and that's going against guys like Connor McDavid and all these other top players, Nathan MacKinnon, all these, you know, elite forwards. I just think his value and his all-around game is second to none. There's nobody, I think he's in a class of his own. There's other guys that are really good. There's, you know, Cale Makar who might get there. He's got the potential. Obviously, John Carlson had a great year. He's not a bad defender, but he's not Roman Josi. And I think if you look at his supporting cast of players, I'm not saying he got a ton of freebie points, but if you give the puck to Ovechkin or Backstrom or some of these guys, chances are you're going to have a good chance to have a high point total. So I just think bias out of it, and if you look at all those secondary numbers and all the analytics, you know, I was looking at naturalstattrick.com today and doing a side-by-side comparison. Obviously, Carlson has the points total. Josi's got the goals. But every other category, almost every single other category in the analytic department, scoring chances for, against, high danger, low danger, all of them favor Roman Josi. So I just hope that people voting take the time to really, you know, put some time into it, do some research, just like, you know, we're doing with the coaches. I'm trying to make phone calls, and, you know, I don't see Philadelphia a lot, but I have Vigneault as my second pick just because I feel the job that he's done with Philadelphia has been incredible. So I just hope they take the time to just not mail it in and just say, well, John Carlson's got 75 points. So obviously he's going to win the award. And I've heard some people say that, but I've also heard a lot of people on Twitter that have surprised me in favor of Roman Josi. So I just hope he gets the the love and the respect, and they at least take the time to look into it.
We're talking to Chris Mason, Predators analyst, on the TV side alongside Willie D. And as we continue the awards conversation, you know, the Bill Masterson Trophy, Steve Sullivan won that years back, but Jared Tenorti is the nominee for the Predators. And I think you look at a player like Tenorti, and he's one of those guys that we all noticed in training camp. You liked him out of training camp, but when he joined this roster, I mean, he really made a difference and got a lot of praise from his teammates and the coaching staff, and he's been a nice addition. What have been your thoughts on Tenorti?
Well, first of all, I agree exactly with what you said about him. He made an impact. You know, you talk about making a statement and being a team player. He wasn't even here when a couple incidents happened. Corey Perry hit Ryan Ellis, Bortuzzo and Arvidsson. Takes on both of those guys, you know, right out of the gate, the first time they played him when he was in the lineup. What does that tell you? That tells you, you know, you have a good teammate that's going to stick up for your players if he was here or not. He puts that jersey on. He's gonna, you know, police, you know, what happens out there and make sure that it doesn't happen again. And that makes a huge impact. Players, other teams, when Tenorti was on the ice in front of net, they played differently. You know, and then this is no knock against any of the other guys, but, you know, they're just, they don't have that intimidation factor. They don't have that a little bit of a mean streak and put fear into the opposition, and he does. And the fact that he's recognized for this award, he's an older player that's played a lot of years in the minors, had a few cups of coffee in the NHL, and some guys are going to go down, they're going to get bitter, and they're going to say, well, you know, I should be here and this guy, and I'm better than this guy, and I can do this. And, you know, you get that bitterness, and it ends up, you know, railroading your career, and you're a career minor leaguer. And he had an opportunity this year, and that's why he wore the C down there, and he's making sure the other guys in the system don't feel the same way, you know. And it's so important to have a guy like that. And now, you know, he got an opportunity, and wow, like he was an effective player, moved the puck well. I thought, you know, when his first call up, he was a little nervous, got in a little, you know, bit of problem getting the timing down. You don't have quite as much time to make plays in the NHL, but once he settled in and figured it out, I just think he's done an excellent job, and he offers an essential, you know, quality with that physicality that the Predators are going to need, especially in the playoffs when you're going toe-to-toe with some of these teams. And if you match up with a team like St. Louis, you're going to need a big beast like that in front of the net. So I was really happy for him, obviously, and for the Predators for, you know, they gave him a chance, and he made good with it. So I have a feeling we're going to be seeing a lot more of Jared Tenorti in the future.
You know, you see this around the league that they're some of these unsung heroes, so to speak, but it feels like the Predators in their history have, in David Poile, they have always been good about finding those diamonds in the rough or the bargain bin signings, however you want to call it. You know, we talked to Joel Ward. Joel Ward's a prime example of a guy like that. But what is it about the Predators and them able to find players like a Jared Tenorti or those diamonds in the rough?
It's scouting. It's attention to detail. It's doing your homework. It's finding out what a player's character is like. This has been their MO since day one. You know, all these players that are late draft picks, Pekka Rinne, you know, Victor Arvidsson, all these guys that seem to come out of nowhere, Patrick Hornquist. You go up and down the list of players that they've had that are late draft picks, that are cast offs from other organizations, whatever the case may be. Thomas Vilkun. There's so many. And it starts with the character of the person, you know, seeing potential, having an eye for talent. Maybe, you know, certain players aren't used the right way or, you know, just that, to identify those qualities in a player and to do your homework on their character. And Nashville has been so successful in doing that. And I think it's a credit to their scouting staff, obviously David Poile and the organization philosophy, you know, going to, you know, these remote places, finding these guys and watching them and putting the time in and the effort to really, you know, scout these guys, get to know them on a personal level, talk to them, talk to the, you know, everyone that knows them. And I think that Nashville just has done an amazing job with that. And they continue to do that. You know, Rocco Grimaldi is another prime example. He played for a few different organizations, got a few chances here and there, but never really got a big opportunity, came in here, you know, had a really good showing at camp. They're really high on him, sent him down. He did a great job there and call him back up. And, you know, we know how that story has unfolded. So I just think it's a real testament to the work that the Predators and their scouting staff put into to going and finding players.
As we let you go, Chris, I know you and Willie have had some fun calling the video game action, the next one tomorrow night. Is that correct?
I think so.
That is correct.
Double check. Willie probably know better than I do. I got the phone call, so I know it's Wednesday. So.
Yeah, today's Wednesday. That's right. We're still trying to get in our routine, right? But yeah, tomorrow night another doubleheader. Tomorrow is game four. In fact, it's a pair of game fours. Game four of the simulated Stanley Cup. I guess they call it the virtual Stanley Cup. Predators and Flyers. Predators, if you're not following, won game three last night to take a 2-1 lead over the Flyers for the virtual Stanley Cup. That's at 7 o'clock. Mace and I will call that one. And then at 8 o'clock, it is the Golden Classic, Predators and the Penguins, game four of the 2017 Stanley Cup final. They showed game three last night, and Mace, I got to tell you, it was – I had not watched it. You know, it's been hard to go back and watch those games. Of course, it was easier to watch last night because they won, and I knew they were going to. But just watch them produce the starting lineups, and that will give you goosebumps. You know, they're chanting for Pecorino. It's just the buzz in there. And NBC, I thought, did an excellent job, because I didn't realize this just sitting in the arena at the time. They pretty much allowed Paul McCann to steal the show. Like, they just turned it over to him, and they just carried the whole pregame ceremony because they knew it was so amazing.
Well, it's one of those memories I think that we all have. Obviously, the way that it ended was bitter for everybody, but when you have a chance to look back and, you know, watch a game like last night, and to, you know, you kind of say, oh yeah, that was unbelievable. I've never heard in Nashville, as we all know, Smashville is the loudest building in the NHL on any given night, and it's always full of energy and electricity, and you know, we're always pumping, right? But that was just, it's a level that I've just never experienced. And it was nonstop, and it was inside the building, it was outside the building, it was all over the city. And, you know, to watch that and to see, you know, kind of remind yourself, because when you do look back, you remember, you say all the things that I just said, and you remember that, but you don't remember exactly how loud it was, exactly how nuts the fans were, you know, when they came out for warm-up. The fans were going absolutely crazy. The building was almost full in every warm-up, and they're cheering Pekka when Pekka came back from, you know, Pittsburgh. Had a tough couple games. He comes out in game three, and they're there. There's signs everywhere, and everyone starts chanting his name. It was just, man, it was just unbelievable. And it's good to go back and watch those, and, you know, because if we didn't have this, you know, pandemic, I don't know if I would have went back and watched these games, maybe till later on, you know, in life. But special time, and, you know, who knows? Hopefully this year we can get back there.
And I also, it was all coming back in waves, right? I enjoyed it, and I wish I watched them in order. But the night before we showed the Golden Classic on Fox Sports Tennessee, and we'll show the other game Thursday that they won, Game 4, which is also a great performance. But they showed Game 6 on NHL Network on Monday night, and I had not watched the Colton Sissons goal that was waved off. You know, it's imprinted in my mind from where I remember exactly where I was. I was just walking back in to my seat. I was coming out of the media area right as the period began, so I was standing because I couldn't get to my seat because the puck was in play when Colton Sissons put it in. So I remember it vividly, but then watching how it was covered by the behind-the-scenes part of it, with the referees mic'd up, with the coaches mic'd up, Mike Fisher mic'd up, the behind-the-scenes look, and then how NBC covered it when it was live. Man, I mean, and Mace, you know this. You've played hockey your whole life. Sometimes the whistle blows early, right? It does happen. So it was the right call. It's a rule that we're always trying to figure out. How could you ever get around that? Because there's some wrong calls made every year with that. But what a time for that. You're just thinking to yourself, what if, right? If they score that goal, I just don't see how they lose that game. It may be too simple to say.
Yeah. You know, it may be, there's so many. I mean, you go back to game one with the Forsberg offside, they were all over Pittsburgh. They were all over them. And, you know, Pittsburgh found a way to come back and win that game. They've got, you know, the players that can win those hockey games. Even game two, I thought, you know, Preds were the better team. They had more jump. I think Pittsburgh was tired after their long series. And then you get to that game too, with the goal waved off. And there's so many of those moments in that series that I feel, you know, could have obviously changed the outcome in a big way. But that's the part I don't like looking back on. So I like looking back on how natural was and all those sorts of things. But, you know, at the end of the day, there's nothing you can do about it. And I always think, too, when Tampa Bay won and they're playing the Calgary Flames, and Calgary Flames had that goal that would have been a goal now that went over the line, but Javi Bouin got it with his pad, and it crossed, or the skate in the crease one with Brett Hull, all these different types of things, right? You look back, and obviously there have been different outcomes, but it's going to make it all that much sweeter when they actually do win their first one.
Yes, no question. Mace, great stuff as always. I will see you soon, and we'll talk to you again next Wednesday.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. Take care.
All right, Chris Mason joining us, talking a little Predators. A reminder, we will be talking Major League Baseball draft at 1:45 today. Our buddy Max Hurst, who follows this backwards and forwards. There's a lot of Nashville flavor to the draft, and round one is tonight. We'll talk about that at 1:45. Darren, Donick, and Chase continues after this.
What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.